Hi, my name is Dave Feldman. I'm a graphic arts industry consultant based in Cary, North Carolina in the United States. And I'm going to be in Australia in late June and early August this year presenting full-day sales seminars in Melbourne, Brisbane, and Sydney. This will be my sixth visit to Australia and the second year in a row for this seminar tour. And I think it's fair to say that even though I'm based in the U.S., I am familiar with the Australian market and with the Australian way of doing business. But I don't want to talk too much about myself just yet. The purpose of this recording is to give you a sense of the material I'll be presenting in my seminars. And we think the next 12 minutes or so will bring you some standalone value. In other words, you'll learn something about selling that will help you whether you attend the seminar or not. Obviously, though, we hope this free sample will whet your interest in hearing more. So, let's talk a little bit about prospecting. I'm sure you've heard the expression that time is money. It's also important to understand that customers are money too. If you're not making enough money, if you want to make more money, part of your problem is probably that you don't have enough customers. The solution to that, of course, is prospecting for some new ones. But before we get too far into that, let's add some terminology to our discussion. There are four kind of people on the buying side of the printing sales equation. I call them suspects, prospects, customers, and maximized customers. And the way this progression works is they're suspects when you think they might be prospects. They're only prospects when you know for sure that they are prospects, and I'll tell you what that means in just a moment. You only call them customers when they're actually buying from you, and I'll tell you why I think that's an important distinction in just a moment. And they become maximized customers when you're getting a maximum share of their business. And that, of course, is the name of the game, to develop and to grow new customers to their maximum potential. Now, let's take a step backwards in this progression and consider why I think you should only use the word customer to describe someone who's actually buying from you. This goes to the issue of what buyers really think about in making their buying decision. I've done a lot of research on buyer behaviors over the years, and the research indicates that the single most important factor in most people's buying decision is simply the matter of whether they trust the salesperson or not. Now, here's a element of core selling knowledge. The reason that most of your current customers are buying from you is that they trust you. And the reason that most of your current prospects aren't buying from you yet is that they don't trust you enough. Now, please understand, I'm not saying that you're not trustworthy. That's not what I'm saying at all. I just want to make sure that you understand that your challenge with these people, with non-customers, is not to get them to like you more. It's to get them to trust you more. And I think that's such an important understanding that you should never use the word customer unless you're talking about somebody who has already demonstrated the necessary level of trust. Hopefully that'll keep you focused on the challenge of building trust with everybody else. Most salespeople make a fundamental mistake in this regard. Sure, developing a new customer is all about developing a relationship, but here's the mistake. The relationship has to be about trust, not just about like. Does liking you play a part in it? Sure it does. But I hope you'll accept the fact that trust is more important because it takes a leap of faith to place an order with you. Why is that? Because you sell a custom manufactured product, something that doesn't exist until after the order is placed. This is not like going to a department store and buying an article of clothing. They can't try it on and see how it's going to look. They have to trust you to deliver on your promises. And that leads to another important point. The essence of your job is to make promises. Think about that. Think about how many promises you make every day. I promise that you'll be happy with the quality. I promise that you'll be happy with my personal service. I promise that we'll deliver on time. I promise that the finished product will look exactly like the proofs of the samples. And beyond these overt promises, think about some of the implied promises you make. These are things you may never actually say, but your prospects and customers might hear them anyway. For example, I promise that the people who will do the production work on your order are well-trained and well-managed and highly motivated. I promise that we do all the preventative maintenance on our production equipment to minimize the chances that one of our machines will break down and cause your order to be late. I promise that we know what we're doing all the way from the order through to the invoice. Here's the bottom line. If you can get them to believe your promises, they'll think seriously about maybe buying from you. But if you cannot, they will not. Now, I can hear some of you thinking, Well, that may be true with some people, but not the ones I'm talking to. Their decision is much more about price than anything else. All right, here's another way to look at your pool of suspects, prospects, customers, and maximize customers. It's been my experience that all printing and sign buyers fall into one of five categories, and I call them solids, liquids, gases, players, and price monsters. Solids are completely happy with their current supplier and they're not going to change. And we know that there are solids out there, right? Hopefully you know that because you have solids among your own current customers. Liquids are generally happy with their current supplier, but they'll talk to you and they'll give some thought to whether you're better than what they already have. Gases are dissatisfied with their current supplier, and many of these people are actively looking to make a change. Then the players. They're the ones who spread their business around among a group of trusted suppliers. Now, they're price sensitive to the degree that they'll usually give the order to the supplier in that group who offers them the lowest price on any individual project. But they won't have the cheapest printer or the cheapest sign supplier in town in their group, because if they did, they'd be price monsters. That's my term for people who make all of their purchasing decisions based on price alone. So, yeah, there are price monsters out there, but they're not the majority. My research indicates that nearly 75% of all printing and sign buyers make their decisions based on trust, not just on price. So, why is there so much talk about price from the buying side? Well, we're going to talk more about that when we talk specifically about handling price objections in the full-scale seminar. But for now, I'd just like you to consider that the price monsters, they're the ones who are most likely to talk to you early in the process. Since the more salespeople they talk to, the more likely it is that they'll end up with the lowest possible price. Let's say that you identify 100 suspects. According to my breakdown, 25% of them are price monsters. 25 of them will be price monsters. Let's also say that you'll get to talk with 20 out of this group of 100 within a relatively short time frame. The concept of even distribution says that you'll be talking to 15 trust-oriented buyers and 5 price monsters, 75% versus 25%. But the concept of even distribution doesn't seem to apply here. It's far more likely that you'll find yourself talking to 17 or 18 price monsters and just a couple of trust-oriented buyers. Do you see how that warped distribution can affect your perception? Do you also accept that it's harder and it takes longer to get on the radar of the people you really want as your next customers? It takes patience and a plan to accomplish that, and most salespeople never get beyond the initial obstacles. All right, in my full-scale seminar, we're going to talk about how to do that. But first, let's get back to suspects, prospects, customers, and maximize customers, and specifically to the difference, the distinction between suspects and prospects. Remember, they're suspects when you think they might be prospects, but you can only call them prospects when you know for sure that they qualify. In the early stages of prospecting, which should probably be called suspecting, all we really care about is whether somebody looks like they might be a prospect. And in order to be considered a fully qualified prospect, whoever we're talking about has to pass three tests. First, they have to buy exactly what you're trying to sell. Second, they have to buy enough of it to make pursuing them worthwhile. Third, and this is ultimately the most important consideration, they have to show some interest in buying from you. On the first level, their needs have to match up with your capabilities. On the second level, I think it's fair to say that an awful lot of sales time gets wasted chasing after minnows when the salesperson should be really fishing for a bigger fish. And then third, again, the ultimate test is they show some interest in buying from you. The person who you've identified who buys an awful lot of what you sell, but you can't actually get that person to return an email or a phone call or talk to you or agree to meet with you, that person is not yet a prospect. Now, that doesn't mean that you give up on them, but it does mean that being realistic about the strength of your pipeline, that you shouldn't feel that you're in good shape if you're calling on a lot of people who aren't actually talking to you. Now, let me throw another definition at you, and then we'll talk about how to identify good suspects. Here's the definition. Prospecting is an activity chain which begins with the identification of suspect companies and ends with your first meeting with the buyer. That meeting will hopefully be in person, although it might be accomplished over the telephone. But the reason that prospecting ends with the first meeting is simply that it turns into something else after the first meeting's goals and objectives are accomplished. And again, we're going to talk more about that in the full-scale seminar. But let's consider this. What makes a company a good-looking suspect? Remember, all you have to care about at this point is that they look like they might be a prospect. They look like they buy exactly what you're trying to sell, and that they buy enough of it to make pursuing them worthwhile, and they look like they might have some interest in buying from you. So the question really is, where do you look for companies which look like that? The answer is, I'd start by looking at my current customer list, both my personal list and my company's list, because this issue really relates to another element of essential selling knowledge. Think about this. Your next good customer will probably look a lot like a current good customer. Think about it. Your current good customers buy exactly what you sell. They buy enough to get excited about. And there's something about their businesses which creates a requirement for your products and services. Doesn't it make sense then to look for other companies with similar characteristics? All right, are there other methods of seeking out suspects? Sure, many salespeople get themselves a list of some sort. And in the US, for example, most Chamber of Commerce organizations publish a list of their members once each year. And in addition, many chambers and other business organizations, including local or regional business publications, they publish top 10 or top 25 or top 50 lists broken down by various business categories. And these lists have value, of course, but they also represent a trap for many salespeople who count on them as their sole source of prospecting information and their sole trigger for prospecting activity. What does that mean? Let's look at this from the buyer's perspective. All of a sudden, it seems like you're getting calls from a million new salespeople. Why? Because the chamber list just came out. And if you're that buyer, do you have time to deal with this onslaught of prospecting activity? In all probability, the answer is no. Now still, a chamber or publication list is a legitimate source of suspects. But how do you best use it without getting lost in that onslaught? Well, how about this? How about starting at the end of the list rather than the beginning? It turns out that very few salespeople will work their way through an entire list for whatever the reason. So if you start with the smallest companies on a list sorted by sales volume, or start with the Z's rather than the A's on an alphabetical list, you stand to be among the smaller group of salespeople calling on these particular companies. Now, I should probably mention that starting at the other end is a strategy that quite a few progressive salespeople have already latched onto. All right, how do you stay one step ahead of them? Depending on the size of the list, you may find that the least trampled territory is not at the beginning or the end of the list, but in the middle. Okay, I hope you've learned something from what you've heard from me so far, and I hope you'll want to hear more and learn more. In the full-scale seminar, which is titled 21st Century Printing Sales Skills and Attitudes, we'll talk a lot more about prospecting, including a step-by-step approach to meeting all of the common prospecting challenges and maybe some not-so-common ones too. We'll talk about time management, how to make the time to do enough prospecting to make more money. We'll talk about the critical first meeting and how I think you should talk more about them than about you. And we'll also talk about dealing with all of the common obstacles and objections that printing and sign buyers throw at you. These seminars will run from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. We'll be in Melbourne on Monday, July 30th at the Xerox facility at 509 St. Kilda Street. We'll be in Brisbane on Tuesday, July 31, again at the Xerox facility at 52 Merivale Street. And we'll be at Sydney in at Xerox's epicenter in the Australian Technology Park on Wednesday, August 1st. The normal tuition for these seminars is $245 per person, but GASA, the Graphic Arts Services Association of Australia, has arranged for special pricing for GASA subscribers, only $195. And you can become a GASA subscriber quite easily if you're not one already. Go to www.gassa.asn.au. You'll find links to more information about these seminars there. And you can also go directly to my website for information, online registration, or to download a registration form to email or fax back to me. That's www.davefellman.com, DaveFellman.com. The tuition, by the way, includes lunch and refreshments, which are being sponsored by CMYK Hub. So, I hope you get some value from this recording, and I hope I'll be seeing you at 21st Century Printing Sales Skills and Attitudes in Melbourne or Brisbane or Sydney. Thank you for spending part of your day with me today.